for the past few years, the federal budget and the budget deficit, the difference between what the government takes in and what it spends, have been near constants in the headline. Yet the scale of the budget is so overwhelming, the numbers so huge, and the jargon so ununderstandable that they are nearly impossible for the layperson to comprehend. Well, in the new book, Red Ink, Inside the High-Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget, David Wessel cuts through the rhetoric and the lingo to explain exactly what is going on. He is the economics editor for the Wall Street Journal and writes the Capital Column, which is a weekly look at the economy and forces shaping living standards around the world. It's a great pleasure to welcome David Wessel to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Give us a sense of this red ink, of what it means to the average person and why you wanted to write about it.
Well, the reason I wanted to write about it is because we're all citizens. Most of us are taxpayers. We're going to vote in November, and this is one of the policy issues that the next president's going to have to deal with. Yet the conversation has been so complicated, the numbers so overwhelming, I'm afraid people can't understand what's going on here. What it means to the average person is that right now we enjoy very low interest rates on car loans and mortgages and so forth. That's not going to go on forever. Unless we find a way to get our deficits and debt under control, eventually we're going to have to pay much more money to borrow. It also means that we have to make some choices that are going to affect what kind of government services we get, perhaps how much retirement money we get from Social Security or how much we have to pay for our Medicare. And we're going to have to make some choices, or people will make them for us, about how much we're going to pay in taxes. So if you trust all the guys in Washington to make those decisions for you, then you don't have to understand what's going on. But in a democracy, you have a chance to decide who those people in Washington are, and I think people should be armed with a few facts.
What I found fascinating about the book is things that I never even thought about and I didn't realize. But if you or I were setting up our own budget at home and we had our cable bill that came in every month and we put that on auto pay, and with every month when that bill comes, it would automatically be deducted out of our checking account. You make the point in the book that 2/3 of the annual federal spending budget is exactly like that. On autopilot, it just goes out the door.
That's right. The government has promised to pay certain benefits, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, farm subsidies, veterans, and to pay interest on the debt. And those promises are kept every year without any vote of Congress, no matter how expensive they are, because if you're entitled to the program, you get it. And so the cost goes up because more people sign up, and particularly with health care, because the cost of each person on health care, on Medicare and Medicaid, is going up. The problem is that Congress lets that take place and then spends the rest of the year arguing over the other third of the budget. And I think that that's part of the problem, because they never have to confront the question of how much can we really afford to spend on health care, how much can we afford to spend on retirement, how much do we really want to subsidize the remaining farmers in the country. That just kind of the status quo. And then the money goes out the door, and that stuff is expanding, and we can't. It's like your cable company is taking the money out of your check, but every year they add another channel and they raise the amount that they charge you.
When you look at what we spend, is the Defense Department the biggie?
It's one of the biggies. It's very big. The defense budget is $700 billion last year. That's more, it's about 20% of the budget. But even more surprising to me when I found this out, it's more than the combined defense budgets, of China, Britain, France, Russia, Japan, Saudi Arabia, Germany, India, Italy, Brazil, Korea, Australia, Canada, Turkey, the United Emirates, Spain, and Israel. Our defense budget is bigger than the budgets of the next 17 countries combined. And I think that's a real hard, it's going to be hard for us to sustain that. Now, of course, defense spending would come down as we get out of Iraq and Afghanistan. President Obama proposes to reduce the defense budget, but it would still be bigger in peacetime, adjusted for inflation, than we've ever had before. Mitt Romney says that's not enough, and he wants to spend more on defense.
And health care costs are the other biggie, I assume.
Exactly. Health care costs were about 10% of the federal budget in 1960. before we had Medicare and Medicaid. Today, they're about 25%, and they're on the road to get to 33%. We cover more people, and each person costs more. That's going to crowd out spending on everything else unless we do something about it. And I think on that subject, Democrats and Republicans in Congress actually are in pretty close agreement. They all agree that health care spending is a big part of the problem. What they don't agree on is what to do about it. And it's hard because the experts don't agree on what to do about it. We don't really know how to get more for our health care dollar. We only know that we spend more on health care than any other country in the world per person, and we don't have the healthiest people.
You mentioned a moment ago that Mitt Romney, running for president on the Republican ticket, supports more money being spent on defense, which shows that there is very much a difference between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney when it comes to the federal deficit and budgetary spending.
There's absolutely a difference between the two candidates. This is not one of those elections where people can complain that the Republicans and Democrats haven't offered us a choice. I wish it were easier to compare their budget plans. If they would both put their budget plans on the table in a way that we could do apples and apples. How much would you spend on defense? How much would you spend? How would you change Social Security? How would you change it? It would be a lot easier. We haven't got there, but we know a couple things. Mitt Romney sees merit in having a smaller government that spends less money than Barack Obama. As you pointed out, Mitt Romney would spend more on defense than Barack Obama. And Barack Obama says we can't get out of this mess without raising taxes, although he promises that he'll limit the tax increases to the top 2%. Mitt Romney says we can get out of this without raising taxes. He claims to have a plan to reduce tax rates by doing away with so many loopholes, deductions, and credits that we won't lose any tax revenue. After that, it's a little hard to know what each of them would actually do if they won the election, because all their promises are not completely consistent. They say things differently at different times, particularly Governor Romney, because he hasn't had the disadvantage of being the president. He hasn't had to put out a budget that actually adds up.
And how much of it is a numbers game? You go back to the Reagan administration, you go back to the Clinton years, and we saw that budget, the deficit go up and go down as dramatically. It would sometimes go down as dramatically as it would go up. At what point do we say, okay, we can hit a similar stride, or is that all smoke and mirrors?
Well, there's a lot of confusing accounting in the federal budget, but that's not really the core of the problem. The problem is the problem that we have promised to pay benefits to people that we cannot pay based on the existing tax structure. And that's basically the core of the problem. We are guided sometimes by forecasts and predictions that the experts make, and sometimes that can mislead us. So, for instance, at the beginning of the decade of the 2000s, the Congressional Budget Office told us we'd have $6 trillion worth of surpluses in the following decade. Instead, we had $6 trillion worth of deficits, a swing of $12 trillion. So how could that be? Well, they guessed wrong about the economy. The economy was a lot worse than they had anticipated, so you can blame them for that. But then Congress and the president cut taxes and increased spending, and they dissipated the surpluses, and then we had to borrow, so we had more interest to pay. So you can blame the numbers game for not getting the numbers right, but all the Congressional Budget Office or any other forecaster can do is say, look, if you continue to steam the ship in this direction, this is where you're going to end up. If you don't like where you're going, turn the wheel. And what's happened is Congress has turned the wheel towards more spending and less taxes.
And as you point out in the book, something that is overlooked, that for most Americans, the share of income paid in taxes has actually come down.
Right. So I think people are sometimes convinced that taxes are going up. But if you look at what people actually pay in federal taxes, income and payroll taxes, and all the other taxes that they pay to the federal government, the share of income paid in taxes for people at the middle of the middle, that 20% of the people at the middle, have gone down. It was about 19% of income before Ronald Reagan got here, and before the recession in 2007, it was about 14% of income, and then it went down after that because of the tax cuts of the recession. Now, some of that is because people in the middle have made less money, and so they've paid less taxes, but a lot of it's because we've been able to increase spending without increasing taxes by borrowing so much.
So we read your book, we're illuminated, we have a lot of information at our fingertips. What can we, then do?
Well, I think that this is a democracy and we're responsible for the people we send to Washington. So I think we have the right to ask the people who are running for office, spare me the wishful thinking, tell me the truth. What are we going to have to do to get the deficit down, and what would you do differently than your opponent? And then we have to vote accordingly. It's not right to send people to Washington who just do nothing but bloviate and then complain about the people we send to Washington. If you don't like what's going on, go out and vote. Vote for someone else.
The name of the book is Red Ink Inside the High Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget. It is published by Crown Business. David Wessel, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
You're welcome.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Red Ink, published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.